When did you first decide to become a journalist, and why?
Well, as far back as I can remember, I wanted to be a reporter. I'm not sure I even knew the word journalist, but this is deep back in my memory as it goes. When we played games during childhood, when it was popular, some boys and girls wanted to be Indian chiefs or airplane pilots. Astronauts were unknown at that time. I always said I wanted to be a reporter. I'm not sure why, but I think that it was probably because both my parents were avid newspaper readers, particularly my father, who worked with his back in his hands all of his life and had not finished high school. In fact, he didn't go to high school very long. But that was not all that unusual in his time and place. The time would have been during the Depression, the late 1920s and 30s, early 30s. And the place would have been Texas. But he was an avid newspaper reader, as was my mother. But my guess is that seeing my father's interest in newspapers, the house was filled with newspapers and newspaper clippings, that I came to think at a very formative age that it was something important. And so I've always wanted to be a reporter. Now, television had been invented, but I was not aware of it at the time. And radio was still fairly new. And so when I said I wanted to be a reporter, in my childhood dreams, my early childhood dreams, was to be a newspaper reporter, that I got ill. I had rheumatic fever between roughly the ages of 9.5 or 10 and about 14. I was bedridden for a long time during that. And also part of that time, World War II, America entered World War II. And so laying in bed, and told not to move. Rheumatic fever was considered an incurable disease at that time, so the instructions of the doctor put you in bed, not letting you move. I listened to the radio, and the great radio war reporters, led by the master Edward R. Murrow, were very prominent on the radio, and I began to think of them, of course, at that point, by the time I was 10 or 11 years old, as also being reporters. But I've always wanted to be a reporter. I've never quite known why, but my guess, as I say, is I came from a family, my father, that took newspapers seriously. My father used to describe the newspaper as the poor man's university. So I started out as a newspaper reporter and wire service reporter, and then wandered into radio, and then from radio sort of wandered into television.
Mm. Yeah, looking back at more than 50 years of media experience is what you have, even more than that, yeah. What do you think is the state of the news in the country right now? Do you think that I get reasonably informed when I, like, turn to the network channels right now, for instance? Do you think the watchdog still alive and kicking?
I think the watchdog is still alive, but not kicking very much. I have seen some fairly recent signs that encourage me to think that the watchdog is beginning to kick a little more. We went through a period in which investigative journalism and the watchdog role of journalists in journalism was in serious decline. But for example, the stories about how bad things were at Bethesda Naval Hospital, where our brave young men and women came back to be treated, was a prime example of the watchdog role. And when I see a story, particularly that story and stories like that, I think I see some encouraging signs, but I try not to kid myself, and I don't want to kid anyone else, that I'm concerned about journalism, and since I'm an American, particularly American journalism, and for the following reasons, which I think are valid, in no particular order, entertainment values have almost overwhelmed journalistic values to a very dangerous degree. In a country such as ours, which is based on the constitutional republic, based on the principles of freedom and democracy, and depends for its very existence on an informed citizenry. So the fact that entertainment values, let's face it, they've always encroached on journalistic values, but we've never had a time when we're very near having them overwhelm news values in kind of tsunami fashion, if you will. So that's one of the things that concerns me very much. A subset of that is that there are many programs that are advertised and cast as, quote, news, that are just sheer entertainment programs. And then there are hybrid programs in which they're also called, quote, news programs, which are basically sort of a blabber feast that they just four or five people talking in a room shouting at one another. And while it may be akin to news, it's not news by my definition. So that's one area. The whole entertainment, not just encroaching on, but now very nearly overwhelming news values. The second is that in many important ways that American journalism, which I think was always for a long time and rightly known for its guts, for its independence with a capital I, and saw itself as a very important and integral part of our system of checks and balances on power, that somewhere along the way we lost a lot of our guts. And by the way, I do not accept myself from this criticism. And the idea of asking tough questions, following up with tough questions, particularly bringing the inner workings of power under some sunshine, exposing corruption, malfeasance, unethical conduct, and even when it didn't fit any of those categories, just explaining to people how things work, how they really work, as opposed to somebody telling you how they worked, it went into deep decline. As with the actual start of a war, it's sometimes hard to tell when it actually started. But very clearly in the wake of 9/11, this, which was already a trend, accelerated quite a bit. And I've said before, and I still believe it true, that American journalism needs a spine transplant. Now again, there have been exceptions to this all the way through, some very good reporters and some very good reportage. And I do see some signs in, let's say, the last 18 months to 2 years where there's been some abatement in this reluctance to ask the tough questions, an abatement, at least a slight abatement, of being intimidated, which I think to a very large degree we in the press became that. And those are two things that worry me a great deal.
What kind of effect does it have on the audience? Do you think that it dumbs the public down the way, like, you know,
my experience with the audience, whether you're talking about newspaper or magazine readership or television or radio or, for that matter, the Internet, that the audience is pretty savvy and pretty smart, much smarter than they're generally given credit for. I don't think they have been dumbed down, that I believe that they, readership and the audiences, recognize that what's been dumbed down is the news. The news has been dumbed down, tarted up, sleazed up, and ethical standards have been lowered all the way around. I think there are reasons for that, understandable reasons, which is not to say legitimate reasons that should be applauded. For example, the size of the competitive pit has grown immensely in the last 25 years, with the advent of cable news, satellite news, internet news. And as the competitive pit has gotten larger, the competition has gotten fiercer. And in fierce competition, there's always someone who says, well, we ought to do this, and someone else says, well, that's really not up to our standard. And then the answer comes back, well, if we don't do it, somebody else will. It's not excuses by way of explaining how it's happened. So the news has definitely been dumbed down and sleazed up and tarted up. But I don't think the audience has. I think it's probably fair to say that I've staked my whole career on the belief that the audience wants news of integrity.
So is it the whole profit-driven industry, basically, which is kind of to be blamed for this?
Certainly that's part of it. But let me pause and say that I have spent my whole career in commercial broadcasting, and before that in print. That is, I've always worked for for-profit companies, even when I worked at small radio stations, and all the way up to what is now a worldwide conglomerate, Viacom. And I believe in the capitalist system, and I believe in that profit-driven companies and the competition results from that. Overall, and in the main, has made American journalism better. Having said that, that we've reached the point where 80 to 85% of the major news outlets in this country are owned by no more than five or six very large companies. And as the companies, in many cases conglomerates, and in many cases global conglomerates, have gotten larger and larger, the news portion of their business, percentage-wise, gets smaller and smaller. And what this has led to is a tremendous gap, never been this big, between the leadership of the corporate entity and the news part of what they run. And these very large companies have much bigger interests than the news part of their business. An example would be they need certain legislation in Washington. They need certain decisions by regulatory bodies to do with their other businesses, which may have nothing to do with news. You know, GE, Disney, Viacom, now Viacom is split back into CBS. But, for example, all three of those entities I've just mentioned, they want to own more television stations with a greater reach of the audience. To get those stations, they need, at the very least, regulatory help. My point is that the corporate need to produce better stockholder value, to produce ever-widening percentages of profit, their needs in Washington come in conflict with, say, the best of, for example, the best of investigative reporting. And that's an unhealthy situation, in my view. I think also what I mentioned before, the enlarged competitive arena, many more television outlets with cable, satellite, the emergence of the internet has had everybody scrambling harder for one, size of the audience. In television terms, that would be ratings. In newspaper terms, it would be subscribers. But we know that in fairly recent years, even more important than the ratings or the circulation are demographics, because the advertisers want a younger and younger demographic. And this leads to, for example, with a news program, instead of starting out when you're going to put together today's news, instead of always operating the baseline, what happened today that's important, what happened today, what trends are developing that people need to know, it very quickly and very often gets down to, well, that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is what can be put on the air that may interest the most people, and within that, particularly young people. And as a consequence, if you have a story from Darfur, Sudan, on the terrible things happening there and continue happening there, and you have a story about Nicole or Paris Hilton, the tendency is to say, you know, people have heard about Darfur, they've heard about Sudan, and they're tired of it. It's a downer, it's a down story. On the other hand, Nicole has ever talked about, let's do that. I'm trying to give a sense of what happens in reality in newsrooms. Again, I've said it before, and I think it's worth repeating, that in one way or the other, fear rules almost every newsroom in the country. It's the fear that our ratings of circulation are going to be down, our demographics are not going to meet the target, the company isn't going to meet its profit motive. Now, if you believe as I do, and I think there's a large portion of the American audience that believes it, that news is a public trust. And I was taught way back when I was in college that a public journal is a public trust. And over-the-air newscast is an electronic journal, as far as I'm concerned. Now, the unwritten contract, the compact with the public, has been, of course, the newspaper or the radio station, the television station, has to make a profit. And of course, they're going to run entertainment programs. But at least a small portion of what they do is going to be dedicated to public service, to meet the owner's responsibility to the public trust. That's just about been drained out of American journalism. And it's something to be concerned about, and yes, something to worry about.
I mean, state of journalism is one other point. When we look at the conviction of Scooter Libby, what has this case done to journalism's ability to work with and trust actually confidential or insider sources? And how does a reporter or news operation maintain integrity while accepting leaks or other information sent out to serve someone else's self-interest, which has been kind of, you know, connected to the case when we look at this, of disclosing the identity of Valerie Plame and so?
Well, both the public, the consumers of American journalism, and we journalists need to think very carefully about this case and what's happened in the case. Your question is, how does it affect it? It's really too early to tell what the long-term abiding effects it will be. But unquestionably, it's going to dampen down the acceptance of what we call whistleblower information, somebody on the inside who's willing to talk and tell the journalists, who then will tell the public, what's really going on, as opposed to what somebody in power wants them to believe is going on. You need such people. And this case, at least in the short and medium run, I think will dampen people coming forward.
What I'm actually driving at is information has been given out because of self-interest.
Yes.
Because you wanted to hit out at someone.
Right.
So how does the media should react to something like this? I mean, basically, the media has been used by a politician here.
Well, let's be transparent here. Journalists have long been and are used, to use your word, it's true, that what happens is the journalist uses the source and the source uses the journalist in a lot of cases, both high and low. Now, the higher you go up in the power structure, there is a nexus between particularly well-known journalists and people in power. And it's just my opinion, but I think that nexus needs to be examined very, very carefully. And the question of the leader of any news operation in the country needs to ask, and each journalist needs to ask, is the journalist getting too close to the person in power? Because particularly when you go high up in the power structure, the powerful person may want to smear another powerful person and use the anonymity of confidential source in order to do that. Now, ideally, the journalist would say, I'm not going to do that. But, and this is a bit complicated, frequently the journalist to do his or her best work needs access to power. So it's complicated, it's very complex, but we need to think very carefully about what we're doing and how we're doing it. But I come back to, I think the Libby case will, particularly since the special prosecutor put one journalist in prison for, 67 days or so, and was able to force others to give testimony that they did not want to give, this will have a chilling effect on sources high and low. The more important ones are the lower ones.
You're 75 years old, this is, and you're still in the business, and you've seen a lot in your career. You've been to Afghanistan, you were like 24 years a news anchor at CBS. What was for you, like, you know, the best experience, best moment in the business?
I can't pick one. I've been so lucky and so blessed. I can reel off for you at least 9 or 10 stories, any one of which, if I had had, I would have said it was the apex, the absolute highlight of my career. An example would be covering the assassination of President John Kennedy in 1963. But before that, I'd covered the civil rights movement. It was my role to cover Dr. Martin Luther King on a day-by-day basis. So I cannot point to one. I would say that in terms of a breaking story for a short and limited part of time, a piece of time, it'd be hard for me to say I ever had any experience that equaled that of covering the John Kennedy assassination. Now, on the longer breaking story, and if I had to pick one out of all, 9/11, which stretched more than just a few days. It stretched for a long period of time, and its echoes and reverberations are still being felt. But in terms of an ongoing story, covering the civil rights movement from some of its early days for a couple of years. I was a White House correspondent when the only president in the history of the country resigned. He resigned as head of a widespread criminal conspiracy. You know, those are among the highlights, but it's always impossible for you to pick which one.
I would have just two quick questions.
Sure.
You retired after 24 years being the evening anchor at CBS, and many people say that the report on George W. Bush's grounding was more or less this obstacle which kind of ended your career at CBS prematurely, and, right. And that news report files were presented that declared Bush unfit to fly because, among other things, he failed to submit to a physical examination, and the files were disputed as false. How do you feel about this incident now, after a couple of years, and especially about its effect on your career?
Well, number one, the way I feel about it is in my rearview mirror. I'm a forward-looking person, and I've been in journalism as man and boy long enough to know you have your good days and your bad days, you have your good runs and not such good runs. And I can truthfully say that quicker than I thought might be the case, that my experience at CBS, which for 44 years, 24 years in the anchor chair, I can't think of a better place to have spent the time. But it's in my rearview mirror. I don't argue, I'm not here to debate the premise of your question, that the story that we ran about President Bush and the questions about his military service hastened my departure from CBS. About career, widely believed it may not be, but I'm not a careerist. I'm not someone who thinks in terms of my career. I love the news. I love covering the news. I literally thank God and consider myself extremely lucky that at 75, I'll be 76 later this year, that I'm still able to do what I dreamed of doing when I was a child, which was cover news. But when one talks of a career, as you just did, I think the time to assess it is when it's over, and mine is not over. And at that time, you know, history will judge how well or how poorly I did my life's work, and I'll live with that judgment.
This leads me to my last question. How long do you think you're still going to be in front of the camera and, like, you know, do this job?
Well, I don't know about in front of the camera, because being in front of the camera is basically a young person's game, and I understand that very well. So I have no idea. I still do on-camera work.
At HDNet?
At HDNet, we do a weekly one-hour news program. We try to not take ourselves seriously. We try to take what we do seriously. We want trying to make it an hour of news of integrity. But I do hope and believe that as long as I have my health, that I will be reporting somewhere, somehow, for somebody. It may or may not be in front of the camera. News is my passion. And, you know, my dream is to be a really excellent reporter. I haven't fully realized that dream, but I'm still working on it.
What do you like most, reporting or being an anchor?
No, reporting.
Reporting.
I have no complaints about anchoring. You know, it pays well and it gets a lot of attention. But the satisfaction has always been reporting in the field. And, you know, I have been criticized from time to time when I was anchor for wanting to go places and walk the ground and smell the story. But I can only say that's the way I chose to do it. And if I had to do it over again, I'd choose exactly the same thing.